think we'll start the first verse, otherwise, because that also needs a lot of commentary. It's a very, very beautiful verse. It's like a thunderbolt. The first verse is masterful. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Urdhva Moolamadha Shakam. Ashvattham Prahuravyayam. Chandam Siyasya Parnani. Yastam Vedas Vedavita. So Sri Bhagavan Uvach, the Lord Sri Krishna said, Urdhva Moola Moolam, Urdhva Moolam, the root is above, Adha Shakham, the branches are below. So what? Root is above and branches are below. That is what is it? I never saw a tree like that. Did you ever see a tree where the roots are above and the branch? No, most of the trees and the root is below and the branches. But Krishna says, no. Urdhva Moolam Adha Shakham Ashwattham, and that tree is called Ashwattham Prahu. The wise people call it the Ashwattha tree, which has the roots above and the branches below. And it is avyayam, it is immutable, it is permanent. It is all the time present. And what about this tree? He describes it a little more. Sri Krishna does. He says, Chandamsi yasya parnani. Chandas are the Vedas. The Vedas are the chandas. So they are the leaves. Yasya parnani. Yasya, its leaves. And one who knows them, yastam veda, and one who knows this tree, sa veda vita, he can be called as he knows the Vedas. So one who knows this upside down tree, which has the roots above, the branches below, which is immutable, unchanging, permanent, and the Vedas are its leaves, that is this upside down tree. So why does Sri Krishna start with this kind of a sudden, you know, out of nowhere, he just suddenly appears with this. It's the art of oratory. Now, if you go to a conference, you know, and there are 6-7 speakers have spoken before you, and by now the audience is thoroughly bored, you know, and they are talking to the, and the 8th speaker comes, and now he has to, you know, audience is already fed up. They don't want to hear anymore. This almost time for the lunch break, you know, they are getting ready. And he says, you know, how can I attract the attention of this audience? So he has to say something which is true, but which is very controversial. So he'll say, what? So same way Krishna saw that Arjuna, he has listened to already 14th chapters already. So Krishna has seen that Arjuna has already heard 14 chapters. So he thinks that his eyes are glazing over, he's getting tired. So he said, let me wake up this listener of mine. So just as in the art of oratory, he comes and says, upside down tree. He says, what did I hear you correctly? Roots above, and immediately Arjuna wakes up. What does he mean by that? And it is called Ashwattha. So what does he mean by upside down tree? And why does the word Ashwattha? Let's spend a little bit time talking about Ashwattha. It is given in the commentary, but there are 3 or 4 definitions of Ashwattha. Ashwa means horse. And stha means station. So this Ashwattha tree is called the ficus religiosa, which is the people tree, which actually spreads. The way it grows, it actually spreads. It grows from one root, and then from the branches, then more roots come and get on the ground, and then they take form, and then more trees come out. In fact, there is a tree in the botanical garden in Calcutta, which is 750 years old and actually extends for 1.5 miles. 1.5 miles, it keeps growing and growing, and actually the government is buying land, because anytime the tree grows, that person has to sell his house to make room for the tree to grow. So actually it's 1.5 miles long. So this tree, which is keeps growing, and its shade is very, very dense shade, you know, because the peepal tree has the leaves are thick. So when they say Ashwattha means when the travelers used to be traveling in their horses in the old days, the horses would rest. So they are very tired. It's very hot in India. So at the end of half a day, they come and rest for a while. They give water to their horse. They themselves eat. They maybe take a short nap in the afternoon and then they start again. So one meaning is ashwastha means that where the horses rest. Other meaning is a, shwa, and stha. Shwa means tomorrow in Sanskrit and stha means it will be. It is a fact. Ashwastha means that which will not be. So shwastha means that which will be tomorrow. Ashwastha means that which will not be tomorrow. So that means that this world will not be the same tomorrow. Whatever today was, my body will be a day older, some of my cells would have died, my emotions will be different, my ideas will be different, the objects in the world will change, the emotions will change, the thoughts will change. So this world, samsara, that's why in Sanskrit it says, samsarati iti samsara, that which is constantly changing. So this world of Einsteinian world of time and space, which is constantly changing, is ashwatha. This tree represents that world of change. Another meaning of tree, which we will go in more detail in the third verse, is that which can be cut down. You know, tree can be cut down. With an axe, you can cut down the tree. So how do I cut down this tree? So that is, there are three meanings of ashwatha. Now, why do we use the word tree? And why do we say that the roots are up and the branches are down? In our own world, if we see that whenever we talk about royal family, they say the royal tree, you know, like Henry II, Henry II was one of the kings of the royal family of England. And then he had two wives, and one wife had three children and one wife had five children. And then the third child of one and the fifth child of another, their children, which was like his grandchildren, they married. So they married, so their child was Queen Elizabeth, who is currently the queen. So the great-grandchild of Henry II is from where this particular branch of the royal family came. So those who are students of the royal family will want to know, okay, where did Queen Elizabeth's family start? So they have a royal tree. So what do? They make a tree, they put King Henry II on top, then they put his two wives, then they put three children, five children, then their children, then whom they married, and then their children, and they got married, and then they come to Queen Elizabeth, and then her brothers and sisters, and then their children, Prince Charles and all. So Henry is always put on top. He's not going to be put in the bottom, King Henry the bottom, and then the parent, then the children. No, like that, because the grandfather or the great-grandfather, similarly for us, there was a friend of mine who had written a book. He was living in Canada. And he told how he was born in India, and he traced his whole family tree up to great-grandfather. He wrote a book about himself. And there he had written how he came with no money and established himself in Toronto and all that. And in that he made a very beautiful family tree. You can trace up to the great-grandfather and the grandfather. He's actually an uncle of ours. And how the whole family tree. So the tree always starts from the originator in the top. So when we say that the tree of life has the roots above, which is higher, when we say higher, we don't mean physically higher. We don't mean in location. Like suppose somebody asks, you know, there is a salesman and, you know, he says the price of this product is going to be, say, $100. And the customer says, look, I'm only going to pay you $90. I want 10,000 pieces, but I'll only pay you $90. Mm-hmm. You say, wait a minute, I have to talk to my higher up. Mm-hmm. Higher up doesn't mean that the guy is on the 40th floor of the building. His office could be on the first floor and the salesman could be on the fifth floor. But when he says higher up, means somebody who is higher in position, my manager in this company, he has to, okay, if I have to drop the price from $100 to $90, I don't have the authority to do it. I have to go to my manager, and the manager might say, you know, this 10,000 pieces is a big sum. So I have to ask my, you know, district manager or CEO. So when they talk higher, what they mean is high command, you know, like they say the high command or the high authorities. So higher is somebody who is higher. So when they say the roots are high and the branches are below, when they mean higher, they mean one who is the highest. And that is the Lord, because this whole the tree emerges from the roots. The roots are the cause of the tree. They support the tree. And actually, the tree is nothing but the earth. You say, how can you say, well, the flower, the fruit, the branches are actually earth. They are mud. You say, no, 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 no. Mud is different. Flower is different. Fruit is different. Branch is different. No, we are saying they are all mud, nothing but mud. And that is a fact. Because from mud, the roots emerge. And then roots emerge. And then from the roots come out the branches, then come out the fruits, then come out the flowers. And everything is mud alone modified. You know, the nutrients come from mud, all the substance comes from mud. And when the fruit dies or the tree perishes, what does it do? It merges back into the mud. You know, they say, Mati mein se aaya hai, Mati mein mil jana hai. We all came from mud. Our body is made of mud and we'll merge back into the mud. That's why when we are buried or we are cremated, our five elements become one with the earth. So we are nothing but that unmanifest mud, which has become this tree. So similarly, that subconscious, the substratum, the consciousness, which is the origin of this universe, which is higher. That's why when you say God, you know, you say, thank you, God. You say, thank you, God, like that. You don't say, thank you, God. You don't look down and say, I mean, even though God is everywhere, he's up, down, side, everywhere. But when you say, oh, thank you, God, for what you have given me, you always look up. So the idea being that God is not locationally higher, but he is hierarchy, he is higher. So that's why Urdhva Moolam Adhashakam, he is the root of this universe. And then as we said, the mud becomes the whole tree. So similarly, that consciousness, that Lord becomes this whole universe. Everything is nothing but that. And so we are manifest right now. We were unmanifest before. We were in with the Lord. We appeared on this earth. We become manifest. And then at the time of our end of our life, we will again become unmanifest, become one with him. And then again continue our journey. So that is why they say, and the roots are above and the branches are below, the trees are below. And why is Chandamsi Yasya Parnani? They say the Vedas are its leaves. Now the leaf, what is the function of the leaf in the tree? You know, one may think the root is more important, the branches are more important. But botanists tell us that the leaf is actually as important or maybe even more important than any of the other parts. Because if you cut off the leaves of a tree and leave the branches and the roots, the tree will die. Because what does the leaf do? The leaf is a very interesting piece of architecture or engineering. In the leaf, there are little microtubules, those who have studied botany. And these tubules are connected through the branch, through the all the way down to the root. And in the leaf, there is a current generated as the water evaporates. It pulls up water. It pulls up water all the way from the root up. In fact, it's such an engineering feat. If you think about it, like if none of those who are from India, now we know that if your house is on the second or third floor, you're not going to get water, right? Water will go up. So what you do, you have to install a pump, you know, because there is not enough power. There's 1 billion people and there's not enough water. So every home has a pump and they will install the pump because the pressure in the water is not that much. So every house has a pump or a building has a pump and you pump up the water. So you pump up to the second floor, third floor, fifth floor, sixth floor. So everybody gets water, but they have to pay for the pump. But in this beautiful science and engineering, the leaf is the pump which draws the water. It suctions the water all the way from the root. And not only the water, but all the nutrients also come. So the leaf is the one that actually nourishes the tree. We think the root is actually the leaf is more important. So here what they are saying, the Vedas are the ones that are the leaves of this world. Why do they say the Vedas? Because the Vedas come from vid, which means knowledge. The Vedas, of course, represent the highest knowledge. But it is well known that anybody who, to get happiness, to get success, to get prosperity, you have to have knowledge. And as science has been progressing, there has been more knowledge. You know, we have more progress. We have internet and we have better cars and better homes and we have better insulation and travel has improved and planes and rockets. So better food, and they know there is distribution now, there is the world is becoming one. So even though there are problems, but with the advent of knowledge, the world is improving. It is getting better. Mm-hmm. Compared to how our ancestors lived 100 and 200 years ago, our life is more comfortable. We are better protected. So a person who is educated can enjoy life, but a person who is not educated, illiterate, what is his joy in life? First joy in life is to eat. And second joy after that is sleep. That's all. You know, what else he is going to do? But a person who is educated, who is intelligent, can say, I want to know about the world. So the knowledge is the leaves that nurture this whole universe. This whole world is maintained by knowledge. And the Vedas being the highest knowledge, which tells us about the Supreme Self. That's why they say the Vedas are the nourishers. And that's why studying the scriptures helps to nourish our life, to improve our life, to embellish our life, to make it better. And one who knows this clearly, and that is whenever Krishna says one who knows, he does not mean intellectually knows. Like now today, intellectually we know, okay, there is a root and that is the Lord, Bhagwan, Brahman, and then the branches are this world and this tree. Intellectually we have understood. But one who brings that into or his or her life, where he not only understands but applies that in his life. One is that you intellectually, like you know how to make a recipe. You studied a new recipe from internet or from a cookbook. And that is intellectually knowing about the recipe. But then when you go into the kitchen and you actually collect all the ingredients from the store and then you cook it, and then you make a beautiful dish and everybody smells, it's so nice. And then everybody sits down and enjoys that dish and it becomes one with them. Then you can say, I know dosa or I know idli or I know pizza, whatever I know, I know not only as the theoretical recipe, but I have now enjoyed it. It has become one with me. So one who knows clearly, and that is very important. That's why the Gita is not only to be intellectually understood. You don't say, I love the 15th chapter. Kya Krishna ki poetry hai. You don't enjoy that. That is good. But then you go and apply that in your life. You go home and think about what we have heard from Gurudev and what we have heard today. You go think about it. You apply that in your life. You understand that. That's why they say Shravan Manana Nididhyasana. You listen, then you contemplate, and then you apply it in your life. Then only you can say you have clearly understood the Bhagavad Gita. So one who understands this, he alone knows the Vedas. Vedas, it does not mean if you can chant in Sanskrit and you know the meaning and you can give beautiful talks and you are a PhD of Sanskrit and you are a professor in Banaras Hindu University and giving beautiful discourses. You may know Sanskrit, but you will not be called a Vedavit. You may know the meaning of the Vedas, but until you change your life according to the instructions of the Vedas, according to the instructions in the scriptures, in the Bible, and all the Guru Granth Sahib and all, unless you change your life, you cannot say, I know that. And that is why he says, one who knows this tree of knowledge is the true knower. And as we said, knows not only as theoretically that there is God and this and that, but becomes one with that experience, becomes one with that, and makes that part of his or her life. The last thing, I was reading another commentary and they said, what is the practical application of knowing this tree? It's a very good example, but what is the practical application? And this commentator says it very beautifully. He says that there is a branch of the tree, right? And you cut it off. You separate it from the roots. You separate it from other branches. You leave it on the floor by itself. And it has beautiful flowers and fruits and leaves and everything. But the branch is cut off from the other branches, cut off from the tree and cut off from what's going to happen to that? It's going to wither away and die, right? How many days? Maybe one a day or 2 days or 3 days. You may water it and all, but ultimately it will die. So similarly, you and I are part of this tree of life. We are not separate. We may be small, small leaves, but we are part of this infinite tree, the total consciousness, the total universe, not the consciousness, of course. The consciousness is the root. So that is number one. I should not separate myself from the root. But we say that is far away, okay, I don't know who Brahman is. But at least let me not separate myself from other branches. If I make myself separate from him or her, then what happens? There is conflict, even in the family, you know, the husband and the wife. They don't think together as one, but I have my own ideas, she has her own ideas, and then children have their own ideas. Each one is living their own life. They come and go when they please. It's like a hotel. They come and eat and sleep and then they leave. Then that family is no longer a unit. The family, for to be a unit, the husband, wife, the children have to work together for the benefit of all. That's why there's divorce and all these conflicts. Similarly, in the country, you know, different communities and different states. And in India, we have the different languages and different states, and they all fight with each other. So I have to see that what is good for the whole country, not only what is good for me or what is good for my family. I have to extend it. What is good for Bakersfield? What is good for the whole nation? And ultimately, what is good for the whole earth? And that's what the biggest problem we have in this world right now is the nations don't think about what I'm doing. Is it good for the Mother Earth? No. What is good for the US? They'll do it. What is good for China? They'll do it. They don't care whether the whole world is suffering or not. That's why we have all this pollution and global warming, because nobody is thinking about the future. Nobody is thinking about Mother Earth. Nobody is thinking about the whole. So when you cut yourself up from the tree, and that is what's happening nationwide, each nation is saying, I'm separate, I'm not part of them, you know, and so whatever is in good for me, I don't care, the world can go and suffer, go to hell. So that is the biggest problem. So that's why we have to say that this whole earth is one tree. Not only whole earth, ultimately the whole universe is one tree. But, you know, we cannot affect what is happening in Mars or Moon or whatever. But at least I can take care of this earth. I can make sure I don't pollute. I can make sure I grow trees. I work for the environment. I do some community service, help others so that when we all benefit, then I also benefit. So that is the practical application of this tree example, that I should not consider myself to be this individual leaf or this individual branch, but we are all that one tree, and let us work for the benefit of all, and let us never lose connection with the root. See, the moment you lose connection with the root, you are dead. So similarly, the God, the Lord, the consciousness, let us never forget him. Always keep your mind connected to that. Always remember him. Wake up in the morning, throughout the day, at the end of the day. Just thank him. Remember him with love. And the more you are connected with your root, the better your life will be. So that is the beautiful example of this upside down tree. And we'll talk a lot more about it next week. We have a few minutes. Any comments about this?
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering about the leaves that are on the wrong path.
Yeah, because they have cut themselves off from the... They are no longer following the spiritual path. They're following their independent path. The wrong path means selfish path of selfishness, path of anger. And that's why they will suffer. See, when you cut yourself off from the roots and cut yourself off from others, eventually you will wither away and die. So that is the idea. A person who will flourish, one who connects himself with the whole. Hansa always talks about the whole, the oneness. And that is what I have to see, the oneness, the whole, the totality. If I cut myself off, then I will suffer. And you will go on the wrong path, and then you will suffer the consequences.
So one question, basically.
Yes.
Regarding Buddha.
Right.
He was a saintly person, but he was silent about God.
Right.
Somehow or other, believed or not believed, he never talked about the God. How is it possible such a saintly person?
Well, I think... I'm not an expert on Buddhism, but what I understand is that, first of all, the God that we talk about is the form, that is the conditioned consciousness, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, whether it's Saraswati, Lakshmi, Vishnu, they're all the conditioned consciousnesses. And then there was a lot of idol worship in those days, and people were fighting, you know, my idol and my God and all that. So what he discovered, the truth, which he called Nirvana, which is the unconditioned consciousness, which is beyond all name and form. And I discovered that within him when he sat under the Bodhi tree. That's why the same thing, the, you know, ficus religiosa, the people tree where he sat under, that's why also Buddhists also worship that, because that is where Buddha attained Nirvana. So when he discovered that state of nirvana within, he came to that formless state of awareness where there is no form, there is no statue, there is no God. And that highest state of unconditioned, which we talked about last week, there is no forms. All these forms, whether it's Ganesh or Krishna, they all merge into that. They're all appearances of that consciousness. Unconditioned consciousness appears as Buddha, appears as Ganesh, appears as Sri Krishna, Saraswati, Mother Lakshmi. They're all manifestations of that one. But one who wakes up to that highest truth, then for him, even the rituals have no meaning. In fact, in the Gita, it is said in the fourth chapter, Sri Krishna says, one who has woken up to that truth, he does not even need to do any rituals.
Nirguna Brahma.
Yeah, Nirguna Brahma. He says, for him, the Vedas are as important. It says very clearly. He says, suppose your whole village is flooded. Then do you need a well to get water? No, you have water everywhere. So for a realized master who has attained that highest, he may choose to worship a god or he may not choose to. He has no need for that. So I think Buddha had woken up to that highest truth and his experience was the highest. And that's what he said, that there is no need for a form. You actually can directly go to the formless. But the problem is that, A, for an average person, it is very difficult to go beyond form. He could do that, but it took him so many years of penance. Secondly, what people did, he was against statues. They made huge statues of Buddha. You go to the Buddhist temple, there are 20-foot, 50-foot statues of Buddha. So they never understood his teachings, what he was teaching.
Worship of Buddha as a god.
As a god, right. Yeah. And so, yeah, so, but I think he was talking about the highest state, which he calls nirvana. Nirvana means where there is no flame. See, flame, vasanas are considered as flame of desire. So when the vasanas are extinguished, the flames are extinguished, you come to a state of no fire, where there is no desire, where you achieve that ultimate goal. So I think that's what he was talking about. But again, I'm not an expert on Buddhism. I know very little. But that's what I think. I don't think he was against. He was against this ritualistic god. Yeah, because the Brahman cannot be described. That's another thing we talked last week. Your words can see when you say God is loving, kind, compassionate. All that. That all describes the conditioned consciousness. That talks about Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, the creator, sustainer, destroyer. It does not describe the unconditioned consciousness. He's neither kind, nor loving, nor compassionate. All those are qualities of conditionings. They're all intellectual ideas. The unconditioned consciousness cannot be described by the intellect. So that's why he was silent. Because when you reach that stage, you do become silent. In fact, there is a great saint in India who had, he said, this highest experience I have experienced, but I am not unable to describe it. And when I try to describe it, my mind says, what are you doing? And my speech says, why are you talking about that? The state cannot be described, but I am forced to describe for all of you so that you may also reach that same state. So these Mahatmas, these great saints, knew that this state of unconditioned consciousness cannot be described in words, but out of compassion for us, they wrote all these scriptures, so that we may also experience that state. But actually that state, when you reach, you do become silent.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's a good question though, very good point. Thanks. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkhamagave. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.